Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Tuesday, June 21st, 2016, and this is episode 107 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad, and with me again today is Eric Nathanson, all the way from Florida. Eric, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better than apparently the Bay Area. Not only has there been a lot of heat, but you guys just had a tough NBA Finals to deal with after a really long season. So I think we're doing a little bit better down here right now than you guys back home.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, if I watch an NBA Finals or a Super Bowl with teams I don't really care about or have a vested interest, I just want to see a good game, and I don't care who wins. And I imagine for a lot of the country, that's what Game 7 was like. Because it was a good game. Yeah, and it went down to the wire, and it was exciting, and there were a lot of great plays, and it was dramatic. It was better than any other game in the series in terms of how close it was. Because every other game had been more than a 10-point victory for either team. And this came down to the wire. Look, I'm sitting in an office decorated with nothing but Giants gear and memorabilia and flags and jerseys and hats and newspapers and magazines and signs and everything else and signed cards and Will Clark pictures and World Series trophies. I'm obviously a Giants fan, number one. Nothing will ever come close to that. Obviously, I like the Sharks, the Niners, and the Warriors. The Niners and the Warriors, though, are kind of, you know, up there. The Sharks, not so much. I wasn't devastated that they lost. Right. But I will tell you this, if the Warriors had lost in the same way the Sharks had, I would have been like, well, you know, they didn't get it done. They faced a superior team. They lost 4-2. It is what it is, and I would have moved on. The 49ers, it was even similar. They never actually led in that game. No, that Super Bowl against the Ravens, you know, they were what, down by freaking almost 20 points, and then they had comeback. And they had a chance at the end with those four passes to Crabtree, which that hurt. It hurt. But, you know, it wasn't like they had the game in their hands. Is they could have won the game, and they blew that last chance. The Warriors, however, I have a very similar feeling, not quite as strong, but a similar feeling to the 2002 World Series. Because that's when the Giants were up 3-2. But essentially, they were almost up 3-1 because, of course, in Game 6, they were up 5-0. In the sixth inning. And so that's when you got to that point of thinking, we're going to win this. We're going to win our first World Series in San Francisco. This is it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And we all know what happened after that. And it took me a couple weeks, to be honest. And that sounds like a long time to a lot of people who don't understand sports fandom. But it took me a couple weeks to really settle down from that loss, because that was something where, you know, being a lifelong Giants fan, I thought, okay, that's it. I'm never going to see a World Series victory.
You said a couple of weeks. I'm sitting here going, man, it took me like a month at least. You're right. That was the chance. That was, oh my God, we're never going to see this again.
And clearly it was 8 years later. And then, of course, after that, they won two more. So it erases a lot of that pain. It really does. And so now, and even I think back about the butterfly effect, and even if they had won the World Series in 2002, things probably would have been different. They would have signed different players. The course of the whole organization would have been different, and they may not have even won these three World Series. We don't know. But point being, I'd rather take these three now than, of course, the one in 2002. But for the Warriors, look, they came out and they won last year. And so that was kind of like 2010 for the Giants in terms of Warriors fandom. Again, I'm not as much of a Warriors fan as I am Giants, but I still celebrated mightily. I had all my Warriors gear on. It was fantastic. And they go this year to establish the best record in the NBA, blow away all of those offensive statistics, not just the three-pointers, but other things, and to have a chance at having the greatest season in NBA history, at least to be talked about in the same breath as the 95-96 Bulls and other teams like that, you know, it was rough, especially after they came back 3-1 against the Thunder. And a lot of people argue, well, you know, the finals were kind of gravy because they should have lost against the Thunder. And, you know, I'll agree with that. They should have lost against the Thunder. In fact, I think a lot of Thunder fans feel exactly the way Warriors fans feel right now. They had a chance to close out the Warriors, and they just didn't do it. They could not do it. This, you know, series was a little different. I'm definitely not going to blame the officiating. I thought the officiating, again, from a subjective point of view, but it's kind of backed up by national writers who don't have a vested interest in rooting for any team, who have admitted the officiating certainly benefited the Cavs, but not necessarily in individual game wins. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it didn't seem like it either from somebody who was, you know, who's not deeply invested in either team. It didn't seem like it either.
Yeah, because, you know, until game seven, none of the games were decided by less than 10 points. So, yeah, there were ticky-tack fouls on Curry. There were a lot of things not called when he was getting knocked to the floor by picks and screens. And, you know, that game six was kind of crazy where he had two or three of those steals, which were all ball. And, you know, they called him fouls and, you know, stuff like that. Look, they were going to lose game six in Cleveland anyway. Yeah. But obviously everyone's talking about the Green suspension, and he put himself in that situation, so I'm not going to argue that. He put himself in a situation where the NBA could suspend him based on that. And in fact, they could have suspended him after the shot to Adams in the Western Conference Finals, and they chose not to. And that speaks a little bit of evidence and credence to the whole, well, when a team is down, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt because we want this series to last longer. So he's not suspended in the 3-1. Not that it's not because it was his fourth. It wasn't his fourth flagrant foul, but the individual act of what he did with his leg, it could have substantiated a suspension regardless. Game four, when him and LeBron got into that tiff, you know, look, I respect LeBron as a player. He went full beast mode on the Warriors. Full beast mode. He was absolutely incredible. I have nothing but respect for his game. But the way he carries himself and his attitude and the way he responds and whines and complains and even now what he did on social media and what he wore yesterday when he came off the plane, all those little things, you know, that's just like you're just being a dick. You know, you're just being a dick. That is classless. You're being a dick. And that's the part of LeBron I don't like as a person, basically. And I know a lot of people say the same thing about Draymond Green. Because he's out on the court talking crap and saying things after in the post game, and I understand it. I actually don't like some of the things he says too. But, you know, LeBron pushes him to the floor and almost teabags him as he steps over him.
Yeah.
And that's called baiting. And kudos to him for probably knowing that he was one flagrant away from getting suspended. And LeBron could probably walk over him and bait him, and the worst that's ever going to happen to him is a technical. Cavs can survive that, no problem. But if Green takes the bait, it's a possibility he's going to get suspended. And no one I don't think will ever know if that's what he was trying to do. But point being, to me, the NBA disregarded that fact that he was baited. It wasn't like Green went up to a guy and punched him in the nuts.
True.
He was baited. He came up. And he didn't even punch him in the nuts. It was like a flick. And do I think that he tried to sort of hit him in the crotch? Maybe he did. I don't know. It was very subtle. But it was enough for the NBA to justify his suspension. And I just think in a final series like that, you can't necessarily penalize the entire team and fan base for the actions of one player who was baited by another. And that's what upsets me about how Game 5 turned out. And that just, you know, it changed the momentum. And Game 6, they lost fair and square. But then Game 7, this is where I come down to it, and this is where champions are made. Regardless of what your opinion is on if the Warriors should have been able to close out in Game 5 if Green was there or not, the point is that they still had one game to do this at home with the home crowd. They had lost two regular season games all year. They had never lost three in a row. They had only lost two in a row once, and that was against OKC. And so you're thinking, I woke up in the morning going, I think they got a 98% chance winning this game. I really thought the players were going to come through. Now, ironically, Green did come through. He was a beast. He was one assist shy of a triple-double.
He was the best player all series for the Warriors.
Well, if they had won, I think he would have been named MVP despite what James did.
Yeah.
Although I could have actually seen James still getting the MVP as the losing team. But it would have been Green or James, I think. He was full beast mode, and I think that proves how much of a value he would have been in Game 5. And because he was removed, that really affected that whole game. Plus the addition of Bogut's injury, which is no one's fault. It just really sucked to not be at full strength for Game 5 or Game 7. That's not the Cavs' fault, of course. Just like last year, the Cavs weren't at full strength when the Warriors beat them. So I'm not going to
I want to see a rematch.
Excuse. But I want to see a rematch. Yeah, like best two out of three. But
yeah,
when it came down to it, they have a seven-point lead at half. They see that erased right away in the third quarter, but they still lead in the fourth quarter by 1 point going in. Then they lead by 2 points with 5 minutes left or 4:38, and then it's tied 39-39. Sorry, 39-39. 89-89 with 4 minutes left. And you're thinking, this is it. 4 minutes of basketball. 4 minutes of basketball. Whoever makes a couple of shots is going to win. Well, as it turned out, it was the team that made one shot. One shot. And this is where I think the Warriors choked. I don't think Cleveland won it in the last 4 minutes. They won it in sense of how they performed in games 5 and 6 and a lot of 7. But it really did come down to just 4 minutes of basketball for everything. That was it. It was tied, 4 minutes left. And both teams went 1 for 17 in the last 4 minutes. Kyrie, the only guy who made a shot. And it was a tough shot. It was a great shot over Steph. I mean, kudos to him, honestly, because it was a fantastic shot, and that put the Warriors in a hole. The Warriors went 0 for 9, and they had that was a great block by LeBron, of course, on Iguodala. And then you had the stupid behind-the-back pass out of bounds by Curry. It was just those kind of mistakes, lack of execution, and essentially just choking in the last 4 minutes. And that was it. And so the Warriors, I think, were always in a position up 3-1 thinking, we got this, we're just going to cruise. Oh, we lost one. We're going to cruise. Oh, we lost two. We're going to cruise, and we're still 4 minutes left. We always close these games out with a flurry of threes. And to be honest, all season long, they did. Whenever they had close games, they slammed the nail in the coffin on the opposition. Was just a flurry at the end. They didn't do it. And that's where the choke job was. If Cleveland had shot, you know, 3 or 4 buckets in the last 4 minutes, you know, I'd be like, well, they just outplayed the Warriors in the last four. But it really was. It just came down to both teams. Could you imagine the Warriors had just made 2 out of 9 shots and won? They'd be talking about how Cleveland choked because they only made 1 out of 8, right? So it can go either way, and that, you know, LeBron was magnificent. Kyrie was magnificent. It was just, as a Bay Area sports fan, it's just a really tough way to lose a series. You can lose a series and tip your cap, then you can lose a series like this, where basically you were closing the door on the opposition, and they just stuck in a doorstop at the very last second, and you just could not finish it off. And that's what hurts so much.
Yeah, we were talking about it here, watching Game 7, and we're both screaming at the TV as they're settling for jump shot after jump shot in those last few minutes. Like,
they search for threes. Yeah.
Yeah, why didn't anybody drive to the hole? Anybody try to force the issue? You know, anything. Try to get a foul.
Draw a foul. That's exactly what we were screaming here. Well, I was screaming by myself because I watched it alone. My kids went to a movie because they knew Daddy needed to watch Game 7 alone for their own well-being. But and even Curry in yesterday's end of season pressers at the Coliseum, he even admitted that he was, quote, hunting for threes and that he probably should have focused on getting interior with someone. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if they had tried to drive in a couple of times, you never know if they draw a foul or two and they get, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 free throws.
Right. I mean, any bucket at that point is a good bucket, you know? And you're right in the sense that they did choke that away too, because it's not like Cleveland played like some amazing interior defense and closed the, you know, hole and was batting drives away. You know, it was just missed shots. I wonder if they were tired. And I know it sounds like an excuse, but, you know, in basketball, if your legs go, your shots go.
Yeah.
You don't get enough on them.
And it affected like, both teams. Both teams, I think, were feeling the pressure. Both teams felt like we need to make a shot here. Clank, 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 clank. It was back and forth, clank, 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 the last 4 minutes until, you know, I mean, LeBron had that amazing block. Don't get me wrong. Iguodala, he couldn't dunk it. He was trying to avoid, I think it was J.R. Smith who was coming up on the block, and he had to, like, duck around him to go for the layup. So that's all he could do. But it was, you know, it was an easy layup still, despite that. And LeBron just comes out of center field and just – that was just sick.
It was.
I got to admit. That was just sick. And, you know, you can credit that to changing that last 4 minutes because if he makes that bucket, it's – you know, they got a two-point lead. And who knows what happens after that? We don't know. But they didn't score after that. So, you know, but Steph was 0 for 4 and there were some bad looks there and even Steph admitted it. So anyway, sorry, Giants fans. Didn't mean to go off on a tangent there. I know there are some Warrior fans listening to us, so hopefully you just fast-forwarded that part.
I get it. I'd be angry if I was a Dubs fan. I'd be like, what the – you played all year to do that at the end? You know, I would be pissed too, so I totally get the anger.
It was like, you know, running that marathon of a season. It really was a marathon of a season. They tied the Bulls with 88 wins for an entire season and postseason together. All they had to do was get one more win out of three games to get 89. They had never lost three in a row. No team in NBA history had ever come back from 3-1 in the finals. You know, you can go through all of the stats, right, over and over and over again. And it was like they got to the last 10 feet of a marathon and sat down.
Yep.
And that's what – or tripped and fell or whatever. I mean, it literally – that's what it feels like. It's like they weren't – you know, neck and neck with someone to the end. I mean, it was like, we're just going to fall on our faces here. And, you know, at least they have the one from last year, so that softens the blow a little bit, unlike 2002 with the Giants, because that would have been their first at the time. And you're thinking, that's it. They're never going to have another chance. And the Warriors are going to be good next year. They're going to be good. They're going to be right back out there. Steph was not 100%. He's, you know, hopefully we'll get back to being the way he was. But, that's what makes sports great, I guess. You know what I'm saying? And
it is.
And obviously part of me, the objective part of me, is happy for Cleveland. Think about the Giants have suffered for all those years until 2010. Cleveland as an entire sports town. We're not talking – I mean, they didn't have a football championship, right? You know? That was their last championship in 1964, was the NFL – championship for the Browns. That, you know, their baseball team hasn't won, their football team hasn't won, their basketball team hasn't won since then. So for the city of Cleveland, because it's a shitty place, they need something.
They still have to live in Cleveland.
They still have to live in Cleveland.
At least they get a championship out of it.
At least they get something out of it. So, you know, you got to say something there. And I think, you know, if LeBron stays with Cleveland, which who knows what's going to happen, they're going to be right back in the mix of it. So are the Warriors. And we may see a third match. Wouldn't that be crazy?
I think it'd be fun to watch one more time, yeah.
It'd be fun. All right, so Giants baseball.
Yeah, well, because, you know, people like you, they've been watching the Warriors, so I guess we got to catch them up on the season now.
Yeah, you should have seen the Bay Area, by the way, because I had been recording the game. I didn't get home until it was probably halftime. So I had to avoid all social media and radio, and then I got home, and then I, you know, was watching the DVR so I could skip the commercials and stuff, and I caught up to live at the end. But the roads, the mall, everywhere, just barren, just completely barren on a Sunday afternoon. You could tell, like, 80% of the Bay Area was holed up in their homes or bars just watching this game. I mean, it doesn't get any better than a Game 7, right?
Nope.
I mean, it's like the Super Bowl. You know, it's Game 7. It is what it is. And so everybody in the Bay Area was crazy. Hey, did you know that now the Giants are obviously going to have to win the World Series?
Yeah.
Because all three major sports championships have been won in the Bay Area this year?
By other teams.
Yes. That's true. But yeah, I mean, the Super Bowl was played in Santa Clara, so it didn't matter who won there.
Well, you knew the Niners weren't going to be there.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And then, of course, the Pittsburgh Penguins clinched in San Jose. And now the Cavs clinched in Oakland. So it's really
Giants
weird.
The Giants will have to beat the Indians in San Francisco to even it all out.
But isn't that a strange stat? That is bizarre. That is bizarre. Yeah, all three championships so far have been won in the Bay Area. Oh, by the way, no Bay Area team has a championship, by the way.
But it's an even year, so, you know, everything will balance itself out.
It'll balance itself out. Well, hey, the Giants have won 8 out of 9. Yesterday was a little bit of a bump in the road. You can't say that, you know, pitching was horrible. Bum pitched the full 8 innings. He allowed that one home run, which was almost pulled back by Pagan, and they lost 1-0. And he lowered his ERA.
Yeah. The Pirates never had a runner in scoring position. The only guy that got past first base was the homer.
I know. That's the crazy thing about baseball, and that's why I hate the whole win-loss thing anyway. Again, you can win giving up 7 runs, or you could lose giving up 1 in 8 innings. You know, it's the way the game is structured. But so Bum's not worried about the loss. He's just
he's been on a tear.
He is superhuman right now. I mean, this is by far his best regular season of his career.
Well, the last 12, he has allowed 2 earned runs or less, and that's the most for any pitcher in San Francisco history.
Wow.
12 straight games, starting on I believe it was April 20th against the Diamondbacks, which was also a game he lost 2-1. Which is just funny because there's a loss there on 420 and on 620, and then they won all 10 starts in between. And if he can 4 more games, 2 earned runs or less, they'll have the most in Giants history. The other guys are – it's not like Mathewson or anybody. It's guys from the New York days back in the teens. But his 12 straight games with 2 earned runs or less are the most in San Francisco history.
And that was the dead ball era too. I mean, that was when teams
just
didn't score many runs, and there was not – you know, no one hit 20 home runs a year, so except for Babe Ruth. Yeah, no, that – incredible performance by Bumgarner. He has just been the model of consistency after his first, what, 2 or 3 starts. He was a little bumpy, and then he said he knew something was wrong. He's definitely fixed it. At least it looks like it with his results. And he has been money. That being said, you know, the Giants have their largest lead of the year, floating between 6.5 and 7 games. But the Dodgers have now won 4 in a row. And so they've crept up to 5.5, which is still a fine lead, don't get me wrong. But yeah, this is one of those situations where whenever you win 8 in a row, like earlier when they had won their 9 in a row or whatever it was, they went into a little bit of a stretch. Was it also 8? They went into a little bump where, you know, they went like 5-5 over 10, but they had lost 3 in a row at one stretch and things like that. And everything regresses to the mean. So I fully expect the Giants over the next 5 to 10 games, they might be 500 or less, to be honest. That's just what happens in baseball. You can't consistently keep up a, you know, 800 winning percentage over time.
Well, they might be able to. They don't face a team with a winning record until they play Boston after the All-Star break.
Well, that's true. They do have 3 more against Pittsburgh, but then they got Philly coming in. So,
and Philly's not good anymore. They lost seven in a row,
actually.
Yeah, they're not good at all. The Giants, their 8-game win streak, it was their second this season. There's been 4 8-game win streaks in baseball this year.
And the Giants have two of them.
Yeah, the Cubs and the Phillies, ironically, have the other ones.
You can't.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, second best record in the National League. And of course, you know, the overachieving Cubs have the best record at like five and a half games above the Giants. But that's like an outlier,
and
you know.
They have a better record than the Cubs since May 11th. This 35-game stretch from May 11th until before yesterday's game, the Giants were 28-7, which was the best 35-game stretch of any San Francisco team in history.
28-7, that's an 800 winning percentage. My goodness.
Exactly. And it was the best that they'd had since 1954 in New York when they went 29-6 over a 35-game stretch.
And, of course, they won the World Series that year.
Right. They beat the Indians,
ironically.
Ironically.
So, speaking of
I don't know why I threw the Indians out there earlier, too, because I was thinking about the whole Cleveland revenge thing for Bay Area people.
Well, Cleveland's not having a bad year this year, so you never know. It could happen.
Oh, they're leading their division by a game right now.
Yeah, so. But you know, Cueto goes tonight.
Giants, this is unprecedented. They have the best record in baseball. They have 16 wins in one-run games. Again, tied for the best in baseball with Texas.
Yep.
This is like unprecedented territory, and there's times that we still don't even feel like they're playing that well.
I know, isn't that strange? It really is. I mean, they've been having a lot of close games. Their pitching has definitely been dominating, but when they've needed the offensive output, they've gotten it. Although, you know, one was a 10-1 win. I guess they didn't need it then. But no, they've been playing well. The one thing that I'm concerned about, and I'm just going to jump to it now. It's a little ahead in our notes. But offensively, of course, the Giants are about middle of the pack, right, for the National League right now in terms of batting average and things of that nature. You know, you had Tomlinson go out, which was like, well, he's a utility guy. It's not going to be that too bad. Oh, Duffy just went out. And he had literally, what, a day or two prior to his injury, had just taken over the Iron Man title from Manny Machado, having the most consecutive played games of any active player. And it was like, hey, look at this. Duffy has the Iron Man streak. And I said, oh, God, did you just tweet that literally the next day? I mean, not a week later, not 2 weeks later, not a month later, like a day later, so he gets hurt. I mean, it was in
my Friday Five. We can blame me. It was I mentioned it.
You mentioned
some guy on Reddit. He's like, that is a fun fact. And I think we were all kind of like, cool, Duffy's going to have something. And then.
I know. So that's it's unfortunate for the Giants because now they've had to call up this guy, Ramiro Pena. And, he's I wouldn't call him a veteran. He's not a rookie. He's 30 years old. He'll be 31 in July. You know, he played for, the Yankees. He won a ring with them in 09. Not that he played a lot with them, but he got a ring. And then Atlanta. And so he's got a 244 career average with 8 home runs, 53 RBIs, and 136 hits. So, you know, he's played maybe about just shy of a full season over his whole career. So he's experienced-ish.
Yeah, enough.
But I'll be honest, before they called him up, I had to look him up. I had to look him up because I was like, I remember his name, but who the hell is he?
Yeah, I didn't even know he was in their system when they called him up. I'm like, really, Ramiro Pena?
Yeah, he was signed in December of 2015 to a minor league deal. So he had been in the system since December. But I mean, he's one of those guys who probably thought, I'm never going to have a sniff with the big ball club, but now he does because two infielders went down. So
Adrianza's
out too. Still,
yeah, and I don't. Adrianza, they said, is still a couple weeks away from even starting to run.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind Gillespie. He showed on Sunday when he shot that double to the gap that to knock in two runs to expand the lead in Tampa. He showed that, you know, he can hit in the clutch situations, after Duffy went out that game. So I don't mind Connor, you know, staying in there for a little bit. But the problem is the fact that they're so lefty heavy right now.
They are.
The Giants. They have nothing but left-handed bats, and losing Duffy loses a right-handed bat in the lineup.
That's a really good
point.
Which
is why Pena will get, you know, some of these starts because mm-hmm. we've got, what, Belt, Panic, Span, Pagan if it's a right-handed
Crawford.
Pitcher, Blanco. Yeah, Crawford. Look at that. That's six of them. Right up and down. Posey's the only righty. Let's see. We got Posey as a righty. We've got Mac Williamson, who's just recalled as a right-handed hitter.
Was he just recalled? I missed it.
He was. It came across, actually, while we started recording. Mac's been recalled while Duffy's been put on the 15-day DL with his strained Achilles tendon.
That makes sense. Yeah. You're right. Jarrett Parker's a lefty. I mean, you just go down the list, and they are definitely a lefty-heavy, you know, lineup, which, you know, is good in the sense of most – pitching staffs are dominated by right-handers, but not their bullpens.
Well, it's even weirder because against the Dodgers, they face nothing but left-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, they've been facing lefties and forced to go through this and, like, put out that left-handed lineup, and they seem to be winning. They seem to be doing well with it.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. You know, 8 out of 9 ain't bad. I don't want them to get into this little rut here coming back home if they lose, you know, the next three. Although, Cueto, he's the active leader in wins against Pittsburgh with 18 wins.
Wow.
He's been obviously on fire lately. So you just don't want to see it, what happened last night. That's what you don't want to see.
Tonight,
give up one or two runs and the Giants can't score any.
They're facing a kid making his first major league start.
Which means they're not going to score many runs.
Yeah. This guy's last name is – his name is Boskan.
Yeah.
They just released it. They didn't know who was going to start until earlier today. Yeah, Boskan.
Oh.
Wilfredo Boskan.
No, it's funny. We talked about this last podcast or two podcasts ago where I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know that every time they face a new guy – they struggle, and a lot of teams do. It's not just the Giants. It's because they don't have a scouting report. They don't have the experience. They don't know what to look for. I get it. So a lot of times these rookies, these debuters, these phenoms who come up, they have this flash in the pan their first month because they're facing teams that have no book on them. And then, you know, people start to build that book, and then they know what to look for. So unfortunately, it is that his major league debut, and I'm not saying they would rather face Kershaw tonight, but they have actually had more success on some games against Kershaw than some rookies. Just saying. So we'll see what happens tonight. Hopefully they'll just torch the kid and it'll be no problem. So yeah, the Shark, man, he had a couple bumps in the road there. He had a game where he gave up four home runs, but his last game in Tampa Bay, really, really good. He kept the ball down, complete game, one run. Fantastic. I mean, how do you feel about him now?
I was starting to worry. I really was. I was like, oh no, is the real Jeff Samaras just standing up finally? Right. I think he's just going to be streaky like this. I really do. I think he'll go through a couple starts where he gave up the home runs, you know, where he leaves the ball in the middle of the plate, where, you know, it doesn't have as much cut on it. But I think there'll also be starts like against Tampa. Tampa's a swing and miss team. They're a free swinging kind of team. So that's his sweet spot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's his sweet spot as a pitcher. And because he can bring it, you know, and he can get them to chase the 95 mile an hour letter high fastball that you can't get your hands to. You know, he can get guys to chase those pitches and things like that. So he looks good again. You know, I hope he can handle Pittsburgh. What is it, tomorrow he'll face Pittsburgh? He should. You know, he should be able to. It's going to be familiarity again for him from being with the Cubs for so long, just like it's familiarity for Cueto tonight. You know, so it's a place he's pitched a lot. So I don't know if he's back, because, you know, Pittsburgh can be a launching pad, but I'm not as worried about him as I was. I just hope he doesn't go through one of these streaks in October. If he doesn't, we'll be fine.
All of us expect him to have his White Sox kind of games, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be those games where he just loses his elevation and he gets tattooed like he did a couple of games. But yeah, when you see him kind of correct course in Tampa Bay, and you know that's a launching pad, and Tampa's a power hitting team, a home run hitting team. He didn't allow any, so I mean that was fantastic.
He allowed one in the ninth.
One in the ninth. That's right. It was one in the ninth.
Brad Miller. Yeah, Brad Miller.
5-0 or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, the thing I noticed too is we know Cueto turns his back to the hitter as he's delivering. I noticed Shark was turning his back more, as almost he's trying to tell himself to keep his front shoulder in as he then drives through. And I wonder if that's how he was keeping the ball down as much, because if his front shoulder would fly open, you know, he'd release the ball higher and it would tend to stay higher in the zone. Yeah. So I wonder if that's a little mechanic that he picked up from talking to Cueto and Rags and working on it.
That's interesting. And speaking of Cueto, I mean, what was it, two starts ago, I guess it was? I can't recall. This is just coming off the top of my mind, not in the notes. Where he got called for the balk on his shimmy?
Yeah. Yeah, it was
Did you agree with that?
I did, actually. I have to preface, Giants fans, if you don't know, I umpired for like 20 years. I went to school to become a professional umpire, studied under Hunter Wendelstadt and Paul Nord, Dana DeMuth, Randy Marsh, Ed Hickox, and there's many more names that can go on. Dan Bellino, Vic Carapazza.
Nice.
Yeah, those guys were actually minor league umpires when I studied. And they it's a variance in your motion when you are – the bottom line is he was trying to deceive the hitters, but deceived the runner at the same time.
At the same time, yeah.
Right.
I can see that.
Right. It's okay if he does that with nobody on base. Literally, no umpire cares what you do in your windup.
No, it doesn't matter. There's nobody on base.
Yeah. Really don't care. You're not trying to deceive us in any way, the runners in any way. So I had no problem with them calling him on it. I think that could have clarified it better to Bochy, though. I think when they talk about how he's done the shimmy all year and stuff like that, I don't think Bochy and Cueto even realize that generally there's nobody on base when Cueto does it. Because when Cueto does that is when he's feeling a groove, when he's on, when he's, you know, consistently pitching from the windup, not having to be stuck in the stretch. You know, because he doesn't do these little funky twists and turns in the stretch. Because it's now illegal for him to if he were to turn his back completely on the hitter on one pitch and then have a normal motion on the next pitch while there's a runner on second, that could be called a balk because it's a variance from his normal delivery.
All right. No,
so
I get
that's
that.
What I just don't think it was explained well.
No, I don't think it was explained well, but there was, you know, I umpired not as much as you, but just as in, you know, Little League and everything like that. And no one shimmied or anything like that. This is a unique situation. But I will say that I can see the argument that even though he is trying to deceive the hitter, but it can also deceive the runner. So by nature, if you're altering your motion too much from pitch to pitch, that's going to be called a balk. You know, just like if you have a normal delivery, you have your leg kick and a pitch, and a leg kick and a pitch, and a leg kick and a pitch, and then the next time you leg kick and pause for like a second or two, and then pitch, that's going to be called a balk.
Yes.
So it's kind of the same thing, you know?
It is. And the thing of it is it sounds weird, but had the runner happened to be breaking for home and he shimmied like that, and then the runner stopped because he thought he might have stepped off the rubber or something like that, that is legit the like one instance why it's deceptive, but because that is a possibility – Cueto got screwed and had to give up the run. And that run was important. That was the Dodgers' loss, the one loss they had to the Dodgers in that series.
No, it was. It was. It was a little rough, but, you know, it's okay. Yeah. So they did sweep the Tampa Bay Rays. That was their fifth, I think their fifth sweep of the year, which is
Sixth now.
Wow.
Yes, they've swept six times.
That is really
good.
They've
only been swept once. Yeah, it is. I've got some of those. Yeah, I got some of those stats in front of me.
Six sweeps. And, of course, the one sweep against them was a four-gamer versus Arizona, and of course they're irrelevant at this point.
At home, only Greinke's relevant right now.
Yeah, only Greinke. Exactly. He's on my fantasy team, so at least he's doing well for that. but you noted here that panic is coming around, and you know I was looking up his stats, and I think you're right. I mean, the last seven, obviously he's hitting over 300. He also leads the team in RBI with six over his last seven. But he was one of those guys that I agree. I mean, he's not. This is what his junior year, I guess you could say. He's not been performing as well as I had hoped, but he's starting to pick it up right now, just like Duffy was and some other players.
Well, you remember Panic went out for like a week. I don't remember if he got DL'd earlier this season. I'd have to look it up again. But you remember he had a back issue or something for a few days. And so he started off well, so much so that Mark Simon, I think it was like, he's going to win the batting title. And then he totally fell off a cliff. So maybe he's just coming back around right now. It was weird. That ninth inning home run he had on Saturday to break the tie was the first home run.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a great game. That was a lot of fun. That was the first home run the Giants had hit in the ninth inning all season.
Wow, that's a good stat. I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, wow. All season long. That was the first home run they'd hit in the ninth inning.
Okay.
Yeah, it was game 69, too, so it took him forever to do it.
Well, that's huge.
But they've hit the most home runs in the eighth inning, which is even funnier. So it goes to show you that they're like taking care of business late in games. We saw it in Tampa this past weekend where they put together a four-run rally in the eighth, as well as putting together the three runs off Panic's home run in the ninth the day before. So they're winning games late. Like They showed the huge difference between why Tampa's not a good team and why the Giants are winning some games right now. They just absolutely owned them when it came time for the bullpens to come out.
No, it was great. I did not expect a sweep in Tampa. I mean, you know, when you're on the road, it's hard to sweep, so no matter who you're playing. So we're going to take that. So that's why, you know, you got to take your 1-0 losses with bum pitching in Pittsburgh. It's like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
At least it didn't happen in the wild card game a couple years ago.
Well, you know, and at least the home run again was solo. 8 of 9 home runs that he's given up this year have been solo shots.
Yeah.
So he limits the damage.
He limits the damage. He's going to make mistakes. We all know this. It's going to happen. And he's human. But, well, slightly superhuman, but he's still partially human. That's going to happen.
Maybe.
All right. So All-Star voting ends on, I think you mean July 3rd, right?
No. Oh, I didn't put the zero. It's June 30th.
Oh, June 30th. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, because you had June 3rd here. I was like, no, I don't think so. So June 30th. Yeah, I voted a few times. I never vote like what some fans do where they're just clicking over and over again. I get it. I just don't have the time to do that.
I hadn't voted yet, so.
Which Giants are All-Stars? I have not looked at the recent leaders. Have you?
I haven't. I could probably find it soon. Today is a Tuesday, and I know that they might actually release it today. So I'll take a look at the media account, the MLB media feed, and see if they put it out. But I don't think the Giants are really leading anywhere. I know the Cubs had a very very big lead on it.
Yeah.
Nope, this isn't it. No, I can't find it. I know the Cubs did. I can't see that any Giants going to get voted in.
You know, I mean, I know that Posey was behind of Molina, which again, it's like, what the hell? I mean, Molina's a great defensive catcher. He's done nothing offensively, but whatever. It's middle America. You know, they're going to vote for their Cardinals. What's that?
I got to open Bleacher Report, but apparently it just got released as we've been talking.
Oh, well, there you go. Tuesday for the NL, huh?
No, it's Tuesday for the AL. We get ours tomorrow. Damn it.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, but it's been Cubs. It's been Molina, Dexter Fowler out in the outfield, Hayward, somebody else. No Giant is leading anywhere.
No. So as of last week, June 15th, the Cubs have Anthony Rizzo, Ben Zobrist, Chris Bryant, and Addison Russell leading their positions right now.
Cubs.
And then, like you said, Dexter Fowler will probably be there. Jake Arrieta, Jason Hamill, John Lester.
I mean, they're all good. And it's funny, though.
Did you know that David Ross continues to lead all NL write-in votes?
Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
But he's still not in the top five in catching position. So
that's hilarious. But trying to get Grandpa into the All-Star
exactly.
game. That's funny.
I do think this is just one of those years because the Cubs have been overachieving so much that, you know, they could have freaking 9-10 players on the All-Star roster. You know, it happens. It's fine, whatever. If the Giants only have two players there, doesn't matter. Doesn't mean anything.
I think they'll have more. I don't think we'll get any starters unless Posey overtakes Molina. But I think the four guys I listed there, Posey, Belt, Bum, and Cueto, I think those are their best chances.
Bum and Cueto have to be locks.
I think so too.
They have to be locked because that's all manager decisions. Right? Posey's going to be taken, even if he doesn't overtake Molina. Those three, I think, are absolute locks. After that, it's a little bit more fuzzy. I think Crawford has a good case, you know, at shortstop.
That's true.
You know, it is what it is. I think Hunter Pence would have been there if he had not gotten injured. He was on a trajectory to be there. But
just like Joe Panic probably could have been there had he been on that trajectory, stayed on his trajectory.
Yeah, but those two are not going to be on. So, but yeah, I think you're right. I think the Giants are probably going to have not going to have more than three or four players and maybe not even one starter, which is unfortunate, especially if they go to the All-Star break with the second best record in the National League.
Yeah.
That'd be weird. But I think that speaks to their team, right? Their strengths. They don't have just the one superstar.
They have depth this year. It's weird. It, like all these guys, even this Pena coming up, you know, everything that keeps happening, Duffy got hurt. And I don't feel, you know, like, oh, no, you know, they're going to start losing some games. Like Posey said it in his post-game comments last night. I read in the game story. He's like, we're just going to keep playing, man. It's what we would do.
Yeah.
You know, they do. They just seem to plug in wherever they need to.
No, and they lost Duffy, but he's not a superstar, right? He's not a Barry Bonds. I mean, is he a good player? Yeah, and he's been coming around lately. But also – they survived with him and won with him when he was hitting 180, right? So, okay, Pena's not going to be any worse than that. So they just got to go with it. So I know the Giants a couple weeks ago were kind of in the middle of the pack in the NL in ERA, but right now in the major leagues and the NL because all NL teams in the top five, which makes sense with the DH and everything like that. They've ascended to fifth in Major League Baseball with a 3.38 staff ERA, and that's pretty damn good. 3.38. I mean, that includes your, you know, relievers, your bad starters, Jake Peavy's ERA, Matt Cain's ERA. You know, I mean, that's not bad. That's not bad. If you remove those two pitchers, it's going to be under three, I think.
Yeah. 5.47 and 5.34 would definitely help getting out of there.
Exactly. So, you know, they've definitely corrected to the mean of what we expected from this staff. So yeah. I'm pretty excited about that. Their offense has not been quite as good as I had hoped, but you know, overall they're on pace for whatever, 98 wins this year. So that's not bad. That's not bad. I mean, we had our preseason predictions. I think I was at 92 or 94. I can't remember. I have to go back on the notes. I think I was 92.
Right.
So, I mean, they're in that ballpark, right? I mean, they're in that ballpark of getting 90 plus wins right now.
I think they can get there too. The pitching,
no, they
you mentioned
certainly
it,
can.
The bullpen has. It's funny, for all our gripes and all our whines, the bullpen has kept up their end of the bargain decently. Contos has been an absolute savior when he comes in to put out a fire. I mean, he hasn't every single time, but like Derek Laws looked pretty good.
Yeah.
I haven't minded. Suarez has slid in and helped beautifully. You know, so far as a starter, I mean, we didn't even talk about Matt Cain coming back, pitching 3 1/3 innings, and then leaving.
I know, going right back on the DL, unbelievable.
It's like heartbreaking. It's like, come on, man. You know,
I just want this guy to do so well. And I think he still has some gas left in the tank. I really do. I think he's going to be eventually okay. I think he's going to close out the season with a good, you know, tear. But they need him right now. So.
Well, he was pitching fine in that game, too. He was getting squeezed like crazy. Oh, my God, did he get squeezed. I had to go back and watch it because I'd missed the start. And, like, every borderline pitch went against him. And even he was pissed. He snapped the glove down. He yelled, "Where was that?" So maybe if he can get healthy, it's nice that Suarez has been a much cheaper petite.
He has, and he's been okay. He hasn't been great, but he's been okay. So serviceable, right, as you would call
it. Yes, and that's all they need in that slot right now.
And, of course, they got Gene Machi back in the minor leagues. So. Which I guess they weren't too pissed at him
for getting arrested.
I know. Oh, you got arrested. Okay, well, you know, Cubs released you. We'll sign you back. I was like, what?
Yep.
What are you doing? But whatever. Anyway. So, Lincecum, you wrote this down. I watched this game, most of it. He was hovering around 89-90. Didn't need to be dominant in his speed. He was great. He mixed it up fantastically. What? He gave up one run in six innings, right?
Yeah, he did, and I think even then there was a player of his that totally screwed up earlier in the at-bat on a play he could have made that was foul. Maybe that was the inning before when he gave up a runner, because I watched it too. Actually, I turned it off after Timmy was done. But he mixed and was able to, like, change speeds pretty well. You know, he made his 88-89 look like 95 when he was slowing it down sometimes. I thought he looked pretty good. I thought he looked comfortable. You know what I mean?
He looked comfortable. That's a good word to use. He looked comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was impressed. I did not think, because, you know, he had surgery, then he did rehab, then he had a showcase, then he had three minor league rehab starts, right? With some workouts before that at the Giants spring training facilities. And it just seems like such a rapid ascension from that, from being, you know, sidelined with an injury to then having surgery to then having some workouts, a showcase, three minor league starts. Granted, it was AAA and his last one was great. To then, like, being in the major leagues. I mean, that just, oh my God. And he hasn't pitched in a year in the major leagues. I mean,
he threw 98 pitches.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, those are the kind of guys you don't expect to come back that quickly after the surgery and the rehab. But also, like you said, 98 pitches. It wasn't like he threw 65 or 75. I mean, it was like normal, you know, stamina for a pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fantastic. So I think a lot of us who love Timmy love to see that. I don't like seeing him in the Angels uniform. It's not a Dodgers uniform, but we don't like it per se. But he's a West Coast kid, so he wants to stay on the West Coast. And they gave him the best deal, so I get that. $2.5 million plus incentives. I mean, who would shy away from that?
He gets to face Oakland again on Friday.
They're desperate. They're desperate. I mean, Angels are desperate with Jared Weaver and all those injuries. And I mean, they have no starting pitching. So they had to do something. And they took a flyer basically on Lincecum. And, you know, he's paid off at least in one start. So, but it was really cool to see a lot of social media people, just random Giants fans who saw him in San Francisco at bars and restaurants taking pictures with him. It was the most hilarious thing. It was like, hey, I was down at this restaurant. Here's Timmy. Here's a picture, you know, while he was staying in San Francisco for the Oakland series. It was just really funny. And he was apparently very gracious. And he said, you know, after the game that he felt like he was home because there were a lot of Giants fans at that game. You know, because, you know, look, A's fans aren't going to be cheering for him, right? I mean,
no.
There were a lot of Giants fans that filled that park, and they had a pretty good attendance that day. I wish nothing but the best for Timmy. I hope he does well this year. They're obviously not going to face the Giants in terms of, you know, playoffs, because they're not anywhere close.
Nope.
But that being said, I think it'll be interesting in the offseason because he could parlay this into a multi-year deal with any club. And, you know, could it be potentially with the Giants? It could, but at the same time, I think the Giants are probably going to just part ways with him at this point. I think they're just going to be like, even if he has an excellent season with the Angels for, you know, two-thirds of a season or just over a half a season, I can't see them, you know, they've already donated. They've given him his bonus, right?
Yeah, they have.
So they've already compensated him for what he did for them earlier in his career when he wasn't paid handsomely. So I think they're done with that. So I don't think they need to bring him back for the betterment of the fan base or to, quote, reward him for what he did for the organization earlier when he wasn't paid well. So I think they're done with that. And for that reason, plus there are going to be a couple of thirsty players or a couple of thirsty teams that need a fourth or fifth starter that will, you know, sign him to a 5, 7, 8 million year a deal, you know, contract.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I can't imagine the Giants doing that at this point.
No, I love Timmy. I will always love Timmy. I love Happy Timmy especially. So it was just fun to see him out there having fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
It really
weird
was.
Weird to see him in red, but it's all good.
Yeah, but it sounds weird. I'm dissecting uniforms, but he wore it well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seemed natural on him. It didn't seem like he felt like
no
I said really
monkey on him.
Yeah, right? Rally monkey. I hate that thing.
Yeah.
So it's good to see Happy Timmy. I hope he does well. I mean, it'd be great if he could like throw just a complete game or something this year. That'd be kind of cool.
All right, so we're going to close this out with a who's hot last seven games. I think that's kind of cool to look about, you know, who's doing well the last week since we recorded. Jarrett Parker, small sample size, but he's 4 for his last 7, so we'll see what he can do as a pinch hitter or a spot starter in the next week or so. Posey, finally picking it up. Obviously, he picked it up the previous week, too. But the last week, he is 10 for his last 24. That's a 417 clip. Blanco filling in admirably in the outfield. The 391 batting average, 9 for 23. Brandon Belt, who's been doing well all year. He's leading the team in average and home runs and RBI. But he's last week, he's even picked it up a little bit, hitting 353, 6 for 17. And, of course, the whole pitching staff has done pretty well, but particularly Bum because he's had 2 starts in the last week. Only 3 earned runs in his last 16 innings pitched for a 1.69 ERA. So he keeps lowering his season total for his ERA. And so what is he, like 3rd or 4th in the NL right now?
Something like that. Let's see.
Which is crazy because it's like you'd expect that to be 1st or 2nd.
Yeah, absolutely. He individual player stats. It's this year in the National League is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, we got Kershaw and Arrieta
and
others. Yeah, they're just...
Yeah, it literally goes Kershaw 157, Arrieta 174, Bum 185.
Yeah, so he's 3rd. So I mean 185. I mean you're right behind Kershaw and Arrieta. I mean that's in any one start he could leapfrog to 1st or 2nd. So
He's been that dominant, and we mentioned All Stars earlier. The NL All Star team is going to be absolutely loaded at
Kershaw,
the pitching.
Arrieta. Bum and Cueto at the top.
Syndergaard, John Lester.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be sick. It's going to be
Jose
sick.
Jose Fernandez, Steven Matz possibly, John Lackey's below 3 with his ERA.
But you know how it is with a game, though. Any one game, some starter can give a
Strasburg, totally
runs.
Forgot about him because he got scratched last night.
Well, he got scratched last night, and that really hurt the Giants. But at the same time, Kershaw still only gave up 1 run. So, you know, what was Strasburg going to do better than that, right? Aside from a shutout, right? I mean, it's like, whatever.
You mentioned Posey was 10 for 24 in his last 7. I didn't realize he'd gotten that hot because I was saying last week that I think he's coming around right now. And he seems to be just driving right through the ball now. He seems to be healthy again.
Yeah, I think his thumb's good again. So
yeah, they haven't been giving him as much time off. I mean, I know we had 2 days as a DH.
I was going to say the DHing in Tampa Bay definitely helped. And then, you know, an off day and all that. So hopefully he's doing better now. So. All right, so I think I mentioned this before, but we've got 3 more against Pittsburgh. It's a 4-game series. They're going to be tipping off here. Tipping off basketball. First pitch is in about another 3 hours or so. It's going to be Cueto against the rookie, so expect the Giants to not score very many runs.
Yeah.
So 3 more against Pittsburgh, and then, of course, they come home for 3 versus Philly, where they need to mop up against that team. They got to win that series. And those are the series you got to, you know, got to execute, so.
Well, the Friday game, they're facing a guy that has a 10.8 ERA right now. So that should be a good way to start the Philly series. And Giants fans shouldn't forget that it's morning baseball on Thursday. It's a 9:30 in the morning game.
Oh, yeah, in Pittsburgh. Yep.
Yep. So it goes Smarja against Liriano on Wednesday night and then Suarez against Nice on Thursday morning. to finish off the series in Pittsburgh before they then fly home, which is good. At least the Pirates let them, you know, leave. Not like the Pirates who came in at 3 a.m. the other night. The Giants will be able to get home and get a night's sleep in their own bed before the Phillies series.
Before the Phillies, yeah. No, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's going to do it for episode 107 of the TorchCast. You can follow us on YouTube, on Facebook and Twitter at TorchCast. Like us on Facebook, and of course, we do have our YouTube channel, which we don't have many videos up recently, but we're going to hopefully increase that here coming up into the near future. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 is my Twitter handle. Of course, Eric is at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2. And for Willie Dills, you can follow him there, and Ben at Fried Duck. So for Eric and for the absent Ben and Willie, this is Chad signing off. Episode 107 of the TorchCast. We'll see you next week. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.